Somebody once said that the family is the social unit where the father is concerned with the parking space, the children with outer space, and the mother with wardrobe space. I thought I'd start off today with a dreadfully sexist kind of illustration, so I should now be cancelled completely by everyone. But there we go. Families are a bit more complex than that, though, aren't they, really? Even the best and the most stable and the most well-adjusted group of people tied together as a family unit have their faults and their weaknesses and their foibles and their secrets. I mean, of course, we all know that families can take things to extremes. Our television stations, they love a good drama, don't they, focused on a wicked family. You know, you go back to sort of the 1980s and Dallas and Dynasty and, you know, carries on, doesn't it, through the decades. I think it sort of just gets more sort of outrageous and shocking as time goes on with the series now. But even things like EastEnders and Corrie Street, they'll all have their families where they sort of scheme together to try and win and succeed and pull each other apart. And yet there can be families where the drive to succeed actually pulls the members together as a unit, and they grasp hold of and they maintain power at all costs. As the Spanish proverb puts it, those are the families where an ounce of blood is worth more than a pound of friendship. Well, such was the family of Annas. This morning, as we carry on our series looking at the characters around the cross, we come to Caiaphas, the high priest. But to understand Caiaphas, we actually need to meet his father-in-law, Annas. Annas had also been the high priest in Jerusalem as a post that had originally been for life. You know, you sort of think of something like, the post or the Pope or Archbishop of Canterbury, those were sort of posts for life. But like those are not posts for life anymore, neither was the high priest. When Herod the Great came to power, that's the Herod who was the king when Jesus was born, not the Herod at the end of Jesus' life, he changed things around. He introduced a new system where the high priest was appointed or dismissed at will. His will, to be precise. So he got to choose who was going to be high priest and have that role of power. Then when Judea became a Roman province, the Roman governors kept the new system going. And that's why in AD 7, Annas was appointed as high priest. Now, perhaps he thought that he might be able to hold on to that post for life. You know, keep on the good side and whatever. But it didn't last. It didn't last. Only 7 years later, a new governor arrived and he decided that he was going to put his man in charge. So Annas found himself out of a job, technically. Now, over the following 60 years, Annas worked out a way of being in power whilst out of power. All four of his sons and Caiaphas, one of his sons-in-law, then ended up holding the title of high priest. And those sort of family members were interspersed with non-family members, but they came and went quite quickly. Annas managed to get them out and get members of his clan in place. The Jewish historian Josephus is quite sort of tactful. He sort of puts it like this. He says, they say this Annas was the most fortunate because he had five sons, and it happened they all held the office of high priest to God, and he himself had enjoyed that dignity a long time before. It's very diplomatic, isn't it? Basically, Annas was good at scheming and getting his family into positions of power. A fair amount of what we would call nepotism going on. Now, did you know that our word nepotism comes from the Latin word nepotes, which actually means nephew? And it goes back to the medieval period when the Pope used to put his nephews, or illegitimate sons, into positions of power and authority. There you go. So that's where the word comes from. So why was Annas so keen, though, to hang on to this post of high priest for his family? Well, I can tell you that things have changed a little bit in the Church of England and the Church generally, sort of over the centuries. Someone's done a bit of work on the financial working out here, and they've calculated that what the high priest earned in Annas's day is roughly equivalent in today's figures to £9.8 million per year. You'll be pleased to know I don't earn anywhere near that. and neither does the Archbishop of Canterbury. But that was actually the entry-level income. Because like sort of lots of CEO jobs or bankers or whatever, there were kind of lots of perks and lots of bonuses that could be added on top. So it was well worth Annas and his family maintaining this powerful position. And it seems that even when the next generation were the figureheads, Annas maintained his grip on power. Hence, as we heard in our reading, John tells us that when Jesus was arrested, the detachment of soldiers with its commander and Jewish officials bound him and brought him first to Annas, who was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest that year. Kind of was probably a bit galling for Caiaphas, wasn't it? That actually his father-in-law was still the boss. They brought Jesus first to Annas. So everything's sewn up though. Jesus doesn't just have to deal with a high priest, but with his powerful family and the empire that it's become. And when families stop looking, you know, beyond themselves, the danger is that the inward focus can become so great and the selfishness and corruption slip in, that it becomes so destructive. And you know, it almost happened amongst Jesus' disciples. Do you remember Jesus' disciples? With James and John, they wanted the positions, didn't they, of authority and power, to be on the right hand or the left hand of Jesus when he was in glory. Now, Matthew tells us that actually, James and John's mother was involved in the request. A powerful family there with Jesus. How powerful could the sons of Zebedee become if she could just get her boys in those positions of power when Jesus came in all authority? So, overbearing families can be a problem even in the Christian church by behaving in an un-Christ-like manner. And it is an un-Christ-like manner because Jesus, as the Son of God, the Son of the most powerful Father ever, never lorded it over people, did he? He's the Son of the Most High God, the most impressive, the greatest dynasty the universe has ever known and ever will know. But he didn't exploit that privilege. Paul says this to the Philippians. He says, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus," which was what? Well, Paul goes on, he says, "who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing. The taking on the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on the cross." So can you see the enormous difference between the family of Annas on one hand and the family of God on the other? Jesus humbled himself whilst Annas exalted himself. Jesus became a servant to all while Annas became the master of all that he surveyed. Jesus was obedient to God even to the point of submitting to the cross, while Annas, his son-in-law Caiaphas, gave the order that condemned Jesus to the cross, so that he could remain on the throne of his life. We're called not to be like Annas and Caiaphas, we're called to be like Jesus. Fundamentally, we're called to be a family which operates not like the Ewings or the Mitchell family in Dallas or EastEnders, or the Annas family in first century Jerusalem, but rather we're to operate as the family of God. You see, in Matthew chapter 12, we discover that if we're a member of God's family, that has responsibilities, doesn't it? And we are members of God's family. That's what Matthew 12 tells us. Because pointing to his disciples, and we're Jesus' disciples, are we not? Jesus said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and my sister and my mother." So if we follow Jesus, then we're not servants to sin anymore. We're members of God's family. John chapter 8 makes this clear. Let me just read this to you. John chapter 8. No, I've got myself lost. I've got myself tangled up in my notes. But Paul urges us in Galatians to not become weary in doing good. He says, for the proper time we'll reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have the opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially those who belong to the family of believers. Oh, no, hang on a minute. Doesn't that sound a little bit kind of like Annas's family? Let's do good to all, but especially to the family of believers. You know, it sounds a little bit like kind of dodgy handshakes and secret dealings. Well, actually, no. It's not corruption or favouritism. You see, we're called to do good to all people. But you have to remember the context there is that the people of God are suffering for their faith. The Christian church is being persecuted there, as it is in many areas of the world today. So the access to jobs, to employment, to healthcare, to education is withdrawn because of the faith of God's people. So actually there's a need for God's people to look after one another, but not just look after one another, but also do good to all people. So unlike Annas and Caiaphas and the medieval popes, we never turn the church family into a place of nepotism and self-serving greed. But as we come to the end of today's talk, let me just flag up one more danger for the family. You see, so Caiaphas and his father-in-law were keen to keep things in the family, but some Pharisees had gone too far in the other direction, and they'd used religion as an excuse to abandon their families. There was a process you could do of dedicating things to the temple, and you could dedicate time and you could dedicate money to the temple and give it to that. And some of the Pharisees were using that as an excuse not to care for their elderly parents. They were saying, oh, mum, dad, you know, I'd love to look after you in your old age. But unfortunately, I've given all of my time that I would spend to doing that. And all of the money that I would use to support you, I've given all of that to God. So I can't. It sounds terribly pious and holy, doesn't it? But it's just skiving out of your responsibilities. You know, it is tough. You know, it's tough looking after children. It's tough being children looking after your parents. You know, and you sort of, some of you get to a stage, don't you, where on the one hand you've got kids who you're still looking after, you've got parents who you now need to look after. And, you know, it's very tempting to go, right, well, we'll just have to forget them. But no, God says that's not the right way to behave. That's ungodly way of behaving. So, much as it would be lovely if any of you want to give huge sums of money to the church, but if you're doing it to get out of caring for your elderly relatives, no. Okay? So, we need to care for our families. We need to be loving and we need to be looking after one another. The younger ones and the older ones and the ones that are the same age as us. That's what families are all about. It's quite clear, 1 Timothy 5:8, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his immediate family, he's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So let's not be like that. Now, you see, we tread a difficult line. On the one hand, we're not to worship the family and to slip into a mindset of Caiaphas and his family. But on the other hand, we're not to sort of neglect our families. Caiaphas became prepared to twist the rules to suit himself. He allowed the ends to justify the means. It was illegal for the council to sit on the eve of a festival, but Caiaphas called the council together on the eve of the Passover to have Jesus dragged before them. The council should have met in the chamber of hewn stone, but Caiaphas moved the meeting to his house, his power base. Cases such as Jesus, by law, had to be heard in the day. And it was required that there was at least a day between the judgment and the sentencing. But of course, we know that Jesus' trial happened completely at night. And as we've heard, a conviction could only be secured on the testimony of two witnesses who agreed. But we've seen in last week's talk that the law was also flouted there by Caiaphas in the case of Christ. Now, Caiaphas was part of a family whose own self-interest had driven it to corruption and a belief that it was above the law. But whilst we steer away from setting our families on unhealthy pedestals, neither are we to solely focus on things of a religious nature and use that as an excuse to abandon our unbelieving or our difficult families. So how do we strike that balance? Well, we've seen it is to follow the example of Jesus, who served God sacrificially. He did so not just to save the Jews, who were the established family of God. He did it not just to create a new family with the non-Jews, but he did it to bring Jew and Gentile, slave and free, male and female, all of us together, so that we were all, and we are all, Jesus' brothers and sisters. So that means that as members of God's family, we must honour him alone, never seeking to serve our own interests or the interests of our families at the expense of others, not neglecting our earthly families. It's good to remember, as we get towards Easter, that as Jesus hung on the cross, dying an agonising death, his concern was actually for his family. And he spoke to John, the disciple who'd so eagerly wanted that position of power. You want a position of power? You want a position of responsibility? Jesus says, here's your responsibility. I want you to look after my mother. That was Jesus' instruction to John from the cross. So take a little look around. This is your family. Some of them are your earthly family, but this is your spiritual family, your church family. These are the people you're going to spend eternity with. That's good news. Because if you're kind of thinking, oh my word. We're going to spend eternity with one another through faith in Jesus. So we need to be loving one another and looking after one another and caring for one another. Yeah, because that's what we are as a family. Real, true, godly love won't allow sin and envy and greed and selfishness and corruption to grow within us. As Jesus commanded his disciples at the Last Supper, as we sung just a few minutes ago, he challenged us to follow a new command, to love one another. Jesus said, as I have loved you, so you, brothers and sisters, family of Christ, so you must love one another. If we do that, then we will have real good and godly family relationships. Amen.